Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8, Lord Krishna shows the universal form, text number 22. Tavangri yugam anukrishya sarish pantao. Gosha pragosha ruchiram raja kardameshu. Kanada Rishta Manasava Nu Srishtya Lokam. Mugda Prabhitavad Upe Yatur Antimatro. To Krishna Balaram Angri Yugam Anukrishya, dragging their legs. Sarish ripantau, crawling like snakes. Gosha pragosha ruchiram, producing a sound with their ankle bells that was very, very sweet to hear. Raja Kardameshu, in the mud created by cow dung and cow urine on the earth of Brajabhumi. Tatnara, by the sound of those ankle bells. Rishta Manasau, being very much pleased. Anusritya, following. Lokam, other persons. Mugda, thus being enchanted. Prabhitavat, then again being afraid of them. Upeyatu, immediately returned. Antimatro, toward their mothers. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Krishna Balaram, along with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Braja by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of their ankle bells was very charming. Very much pleased by the sound of other people's ankle bells, they used to follow these people as if going to their mothers. But when they saw that these were other people, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, Jasoda and Rohini. Purport. When Krishna and Balaram were crawling about Brajabhumi, they were enchanted by the sound of ankle bells. Thus they sometimes followed other people who would enjoy the crawling of Krishna and Balaram and exclaim, "Oh, see how Krishna and Balaram are crawling." Upon hearing this, Krishna and Balaram could understand that these were not their mothers they were following, and they would return to their actual mothers. Thus the crawling of Krishna and Balaram was enjoyed by the people of the neighborhood, as well as by Mother Jasoda and Rohini, and the two children themselves. Translation. When Krishna and Balaram, with the strength of their legs, crawled in the muddy places created in Braj by cow dung and cow urine, their crawling resembled the crawling of serpents, and the sound of the ankle bells was very charming. Very much pleased by the sound of other people's ankle bells, they used to follow these people as if going to their mothers. But when they saw that these were other people, they became afraid and returned to their real mothers, Jasoda and Rohini. So to give some philosophical insight into what's taking place here would probably be inappropriate. Because what's taking place here is Leela, under the internal energy. And there's no amount of philosophical explanation that will help us understand Leela, except that We have to learn how to hear Leela so we can actually appreciate it at least, if not experience it. Just like whenever we hear the name of Krishna or Balaram, the idea is to help us remember Krishna and Balaram. Otherwise, the words don't really have much effect on us. In other words, what effect do we expect when we hear Krishna Balaram? If Krishna is non-different from his name, what do we expect when we chant Hare Krishna? Aldana, what do you expect when you chant Hare Krishna? Shelter. How do you take shelter of Krishna? It's like you crawl into a house or something. Hisha. What does it mean, shelter? So it's like some magical name that casts a spell on us that we become protected. Something like that. And what do you expect when you chant Hare Krishna to experience? Is that what you feel or is that what you think?
Fear.
What do you feel?
Radosti,
happiness. He's behind you. Looking over your shoulder. It's pretty philosophical. You mean every time you chant Hare Krishna, all these things go through your mind? You don't have to chant Hare Krishna for him to do. You're reminded that you're reminded that.
I'm aware of that.
Okay. Good. And Lilit Govinda. Okay. And what do you feel? Experience.
Is it being somewhere else, but everything is okay.
Okay.
Peacefulness.
Shanti. And here comes our Mukunda.
Usually, I feel no fear.
Fear, no fear. Well, that's good. Abhayam. Oh, what about Krishna? What does Krishna look like? What's that? Like in the picture, yeah. Actually, Krishna is in the picture. What's that? Candy is sweet also. Does he look like candy? He has a flute, he has a peacock feather, he has a yellow dhoti. So when we say Hare Krishna, shouldn't we be remembering the form of Krishna? Like did you ever hear Mickey Mouse? But if I say the word Mickey Mouse, what do you remember? What does he look like?
Mickey Mouse?
Yeah. Can you remember what he looks like?
Ears.
Big ears.
Black
ears, yes. Is he smiling? Is he? And who's his girlfriend?
Minnie Mouse.
And who's his friends?
Duck.
What's that?
Isn't some duck?
Donald Duck. And Goofy. I'm well acquainted with the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Mickey Mouse. So, is it easier to think of Mickey Mouse's form than Krishna's form when we chant Hare Krishna? When we chant Hare Krishna, do we automatically remember Krishna's form?
Probably it depends on the mood that you're
generally. What about Mickey Mouse? If we chant Mickey Mouse, is it easier to remember the form of Mickey Mouse than the form of Krishna when we chant Hare Krishna? Timur?
I don't chant Mickey Mouse.
Did you ever hear Mickey Mouse?
Yes, immediately I got a picture of Mickey Mouse.
It's spontaneous, yes. When we chant Hare Krishna, it's not so spontaneous sometimes. And Balaram? So this takes some practice. In other words, because we were brainwashed when we were children, we were very receptive. Therefore, when the form of Mickey Mouse entered into our heart, we embraced it. Oh, Mickey, my love. And then, of course, because we love Mickey Mouse, therefore we love Minnie Mouse and Donald Duck and all his associates. They all enter into us. Just waiting for us to take up the process of chanting their names again. But similarly with Krishna, we have to equate Krishna and his name eventually as with his form. So when we say Hare Krishna, we remember the form and of Krishna. That's certainly deeper than just saying a name, if we actually remember Krishna's form. So if there's no difference between Krishna and his name, there's also no difference between his form and Krishna. But which is more intimate, to remember Krishna's form or to remember Krishna's name? I mean just the name itself, without experiencing the name. Both, okay, but which is more intimate?
Probably
the form. Probably, yeah. Would you like to embrace a name or would you like to embrace a form?
Both.
Oh, name. K-R. And the next is quality. Krishna's qualities. When we see Krishna, what some of Krishna's qualities we might remember when we remember his name and form. What is qualities of Krishna? Is that when you see his form, do you think he's the richest? When you remember his form. What's that?
The most beautiful, the most warm, the most...
Yeah, when we experience the form, we can also try to experience what his qualities are. Like he's smiling. One of his qualities, he's happy. And he's well-dressed. Did you ever see Krishna in rags? Remember Krishna being in rags at any time? Or his dhoti out of place? Or the tilak smudged on his forehead? So one of his qualities is he's a very attractive dresser. And then what about his associates? We think of Krishna, do we think of any associates? Which associates do we think about? What's that? Who?
I don't know if I understood right.
Okay. When you think of Krishna, do you think of anyone who's with?
Yeah. Radha.
Radha.
Lalita.
Lalita.
Balaram.
Balaram. Yeah. And what about his pastimes? Did you see Krishna? He's eternally there. He's frozen. Doesn't do anything. Govardhan Hill. Yes. Govardhan Hill is the one holiday we don't have to fast on. And Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. And we make a Govardhan Hill with sweets on it. So it's a nice pastime. So if we go through this when we're reading, think about Krishna's name, think about Krishna's forms, his associates, his pastimes, then our mind becomes a little bit more adapted to thinking about Krishna. And after all, this is called Krishna consciousness. So if we read something and we actually start thinking about Krishna and seeing him, and eventually when we're sensitive enough and Krishna gives us enough intelligence, we can actually experience the presence of Krishna in this pastime. Then we can see them crawling on their legs, Krishna and Balaram, through the clay and the cow dung, and it becomes interesting. Otherwise, we read this and we don't really meditate on it, we don't try to use our intelligence to experience what's being said here, it's just another words that they're going through our mouth that really don't have much influence on us. We don't really enter very deeply into understanding how nice Krishna is, how wonderful his pastimes are. We may even wonder what's so great about someone being dragged through cow dung and cow urine. It sounds rather unclean, because we're not generally raised in a culture where cow dung and cow urine's antiseptic, and so is cow dung, and it always has a nice smell to it. So if we're not raised in that culture, it seems rather unusual that anyone would be very happy to see little children being dragged by the cows or the calves through cow dung and cow urine. In modern society, if you see little children being dragged by a calf through cow dung and cow urine, what would people do? They come and grab the children and drag them away, try to save them. But these devotees, these mothers, they have ankle bells and they're walking, and Krishna Balaram are following them. So there's a lot of verses in the 10th canto, but all of them are just meant for really our meditating on them and thinking about them, rather than trying to explain them. The actual explanation is that we should think about them. That's called Krishna consciousness. After all, with all the philosophy we have, what is the aim? What's the whole idea of taking all this understanding of philosophy? We're not this body, Krishna's whatever. Krishna's God, renunciation, whatever. The whole idea is to come to the platform of thinking about Krishna with devotional love and appreciation. And therefore, that's what these verses are meant for, that they allow one to actually enter into that meditation on Krishna. We just have to at least try to do it, and then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to do it. And if we don't try to do it, if we just go on hearing about other things and not really taking this so seriously, this opportunity to meditate on Krishna, then we'll never really deeply think about Krishna. Even when we chant Hare Krishna, we have to remember something. And we don't remember Krishna is what's described in the books or the deities or something, the pictures. And what is the question of thinking about Krishna's form? And we don't try to feel remember his qualities, then how are we going to remember what Krishna is like? So that takes practice, but that's what we're supposed to be practicing. Of course, not when we're chanting japa. When we're chanting japa, we should just chant and listen and try to improve our chanting. And then if we hear enough about Krishna and see Krishna enough, then spontaneously the name and the form will equate spontaneously the name with the form, and then we'll naturally think about Krishna without having to make any external, extraneous effort to do so. And that means we're advancing in what our goal is in becoming conscious of Krishna. If we just keep on chanting Hare Krishna, but we never remember Krishna, his form to begin with, then we have to try harder. That's why we have to become more attentive, try to chant more feelingly, asking Krishna to engage us in his loving service. Because his loving service is not just doing things, it's also remembering Krishna and experiencing the love that the residents of Vrindavan have for Krishna, because that's really what they're doing in Vrindavan, is simply doing things out of love for Krishna. And what Krishna appreciates most is the love that they have. And the love is simply, their activities is simply a manifestation of their love for Krishna, their feelings towards Krishna. And if we feel their feelings, then we'll develop similar feelings. Then we're experiencing our own natural feelings towards Krishna too. And that's what Krishna wants. He wants us to experience him, not just to talk about him, but to also experience him. That's called a relationship. If you only talked about someone, talked about how much you love them, but never felt anything about them, never met them, never had any relationship with them, it'd be rather discouraging after some time. You know, someone says, I love this girl, and they ask, well, what's her name? You go, I don't really know. What does she look like? I don't know. I never met her. What does she do? I have no idea. She has any friends? I hope so. But I'm madly in love with her. No, you have to have some experience. So we also have to have some experience of Krishna before we can actually say we're developing our love for him, which is the goal. Not just to know everything about Krishna. Every time there's a test, we get all the answers right. But we have to have experience also. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Yes.
What Krishna like the most and what he doesn't like? Kaj ma najraje, pa kaj največ ne mara, no?
Krishna likes yogurt. Especially prepared by Mother DeSoto through her very nice cows. And he especially likes yogurt mixed with the tears of the gopis. What he doesn't like meat, fish, or eggs. Is that right?
Yes, but I...
He likes when we try to serve him. That's what he likes. And he doesn't like to see us in Maya. He feels very sad when he sees us in Maya.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you for your lecture. So how good is to remember Krishna when you look around, like as the main creator of everything, not just in the main form with a flute and as a child, but like every time you look at something, like in the nature and forest and, you know, breathing air and stuff. So if you remember that that's something from Krishna, is it the same?
Yeah, that's a good start. That's why Krishna in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that's what he talks about. When we see the sun, we can see the sun was Krishna's creation. Then we'll remember Krishna. We'll see his wonderful creation called the sun too. So that's good. Every time we drink water, we should remember that Krishna, in the taste of this water, is Krishna. Krishna is the active taste in the water. It's his energy. And therefore we'll appreciate that Krishna is so kind. He's kindly given us water to quench our thirst. That's a very nice way of remembering Krishna. Appreciation. Even when the coward boys and the calves enter into the mouth of Agasura, Krishna was amazed at his creation, how it works. Even Krishna is. He takes happy pleasure in seeing his creation, seeing how amazing it is, although it's his own energy. Otherwise, it would be really dull being the Supreme Person if you weren't excited about something. Okay. Khwala Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.